Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spreading new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are fresh off of UFC Atlanta. It went down. That's what I'm going to say. It happened. It took place. I certainly have my thoughts on the event as a whole. On today's episode, we'll be going through and recapping the entire event and discussing what is next for every single one of the fighters. Also, on today's episode, your surprise topic, we are going to be ranking Phase 5 of the MCU. That's right, 6 movies have gone down in the MCU. And after watching Thunderbolts, I have this new revitalization for the MCU. So that's right, we're going to be ranking all 6 of the films in Phase 5 of the MCU, since it's over and the next film you get, which I believe is Fantastic Four, takes place in Phase 6. Also, some new UFC fights, and of course, all sorts of random hot takes and surprising things that I bring up on the episode. But ladies and gentlemen, we are transitioning throughout the year. June is now halfway over, and it's been good. It's been a good year so far for me. It's weird. I just feel like my entire year has just happened in different sections. I don't even know how to explain it. And it's throughout the year, like, I've grown up so much, and the year's not even half over. But it's an exciting time. 2025 is still fresh from the boat. I don't know what you want to call it. But yeah, moving on through the year has been good. But enough of my little tacky introductions. Let's get right on into it with something that we talk about on every new episode, and that is new UFC fights, and we got a bunch of them for you today. First one, UFC Shanghai has a new matchup, women's strawweight division, as She 13 Sister Big takes on Bruna the Special One Brazil. She Big, if no one knows, 17-5 professionally. Okay, making her UFC debut unofficially. I don't know what her actual UFC record is. I think she won on the road to the UFC, and now she's making her debut of sorts. But she's actually a doctor. She Big is out here saving lives. I think she's a doctor. She does something in the medical world as a full-time position and just fights on the side. You know, 30 years old, just contributing to society in a beautiful way. So She Big taking on Bruna Brazil, 10-5 professionally, 2-3 in the UFC. And Bruna Brazil is pretty comedic, as she actually trains at the Fighting Nerds gym, you know, your Carlos Prates, Kyle Barallo, Gene Silva, Mauricio Ruffi, but they don't really consider her a part of the gym because they love to talk about all the 4 big heavy hitters I just named. So it's always funny where she's a part of the Fighting Nerds, but everyone's just kind of like, yeah, you know, she's there. She's whatever, but it is what it is. This should be a fun fight. I'm going to ride with She Ming for sure, but Bruna Brazil is certainly not an easy fight for She Ming. They're not giving She Ming an easy time in the UFC, but it is exciting to watch that fight being made. Here's one for UFC Chicago through UFC 319, better said. Gerald Meerschaert in the middleweight division takes on Michael Olakojacek. Just, you know, I love when they always matchmake guys. You're like, oh, these two haven't fought each other somehow. That's this fight. Gerald Meerschaert, great fighter, 36-19, 12-11 in the UFC, biggest hit or miss guy I've ever seen. He'll go out there and he'll lose to Khamzat Chimaev. He'll lose to Bo Nick. Rainer Day Ritter, Brad Tavares, and then he'll go out and he'll beat Brian Barberina, Trevin Giles, Edmund Shabazz. He'll beat the most random people. Gerald Meerschaert is always exciting. As for Michael Olakojacek, 8-6 in the UFC, 20-8 professionally. Just has never been able to get over the hurdle of certain fighters in the UFC. So whoever wins this one, I mean, there's not too much to report on the excitingness of this, but Michael Olakojacek has joined the Fighting Nerds gym, which is why we're bringing that up as well. So he's not actually one of the OG Fighting Nerds, like the big four horsemen we'll call them, but he is getting in that gym and he's trying to change it up. So Michael, if he's going to win this, it's going to be on the feet. Gerald, as always, I think he's up there for the most submission wins in UFC history. I think for middleweight division, he has the most finishes, so exciting stuff. That should be a good middleweight fight on the prelims of UFC 319. Here's one for UFC Nashville, finally getting some more Nashville fights being announced. Featherweight division, Nate Landwehr, Nate the Train, back in action as he takes on the Last Pirate, Morgan Cherie. Morgan Cherie, 2-2 in the UFC, but Nate is just always in a dogfight. I swear he's always in a dogfight. His losses are to, I want to say, oh my gosh, someone really good. Chepe Mariscal. One of the losses is to Chepe Mariscal and someone else. He lost another tough fight. Morgan Cherie has only lost tough fights. Actually, last time out, he might have been in a boring fight. I think it was. He might have gotten out grappled. I don't know. But Nate the Train, he is, when I say someone's not in a boring fight ever, Nate Landwehr is truly never in a boring fight. He is one of the most action-packed fighters on the roster. This is a great matchup. I hope this is on the main card for UFC Nashville, as that card desperately needs a good co-main event, because I'm still perplexed how we can just throw Derek Lewis in against rising heavyweight contenders and just call it a fight night. But unfortunately for that, I don't really want to think about that, because I do think I want to pick Derek Lewis, but Tal'Shawn Teixeira is like 6'7". He definitely has probably like double the reach of Derek Lewis, but that's a tale in a month when we cover that card. But Morgan Sherry, Nate Landwehr should be a fun fight. For the most random fight being made of the year, you will catch it on the main card of UFC 319. I'm truly so perplexed at this. As the number 7 middleweight, Jared Cannonier, welcomes back to the division the number 15 welterweight, Michael Venom Page. So random. Like, I actually have no idea what to make of this. Literally no idea. Jared Cannonier is just run-of-the-mill the middleweight, okay? Just beat Gregory Rodriguez in what I think could be the best Apex fight of the year. Insane main event right there in February. And Michael Venom Page, I mean, debuts, beats Kevin Holland in a boring fight, then fights Ian Gary, boring fight, then fights Sharon Magomedov, boring fight. So I don't know what they're doing with MVP. I think he is coming to the UFC and they've given him three great names, you know, Kevin Holland, Ian Gary, Sharon Magomedov, and he has somehow made all of them look like boring technical fighters. So MVP, he's still trying to find his place in the UFC. I don't really know how this is going to go. I feel like Cannonier could actually probably get another knockout, and if he does, he'd build himself a little knockout streak here, but hey, I'm never counting out MVP. He has the weirdest style, and no one can really figure it out. So if Cannonier just goes over there and uses his big, powerful fists, I would be very supportive of that. But Cannonier, 41 somehow. Now, I honestly think he's more of a Glover Teixeira 41, as opposed to like a, who's someone old? Didn't we just watch someone, Nicholas Dalby, like 40, someone showing their age? Not to be mean to Nicholas Dalby, catching a stray, but yeah, this one I'm very curious to see. But MVP isn't too much, he's like 38, I think, so. Interesting fight, most random fight made of the year so far. I'll be very curious to see how it goes down. UFC 317 has another prelim being made with just a couple weeks away. Nico Price in the welterweight division will take on the undefeated Jacoby Smith. Jacoby Smith won his UFC debut against Preston Parsons, and now he gets a veteran in Nico Hybrid Prince. Nico, 16-8 with two no contests. 8-8 in the UFC, that is. 16-8 professionally, I should say. He has wins over Alex Morono, Tim Means, Randy Brown. He's also been knocked out by Robbie Lawler, Vicente Luque. You never know what you get with Nico Price. He's either going to humble Jacoby Smith or Jacoby Smith is going to get a nasty knockout highlight. There is no in-between. So I'm probably going to ride with Jacoby Smith, but we'll have to see, because undefeated fighters, ugh, terrible this year for the UFC. Second to last new fight I have for you, UFC 317 is getting a short notice replacement as Justin Taffa is out. No more Justin Taffa. Instead, stepping in to take on Hinata Dinez, we have Alvin Hines. Alvin Hines, 9-0. He is 33 years old. October birthday. Love to see that. And yes, he is stepping in on short notice. Dude looks like a dad who barbecues. It looks like he owns a car dealership. This man does not look like a UFC fighter. I don't even know where he's coming from, to be honest. But hey, he's from the United States. Hinata Dinez, 8-1 professionally, 2-1 in the UFC. Wins over Carl Williams and Austin Lane in the UFC. The Austin Lane knockout, pretty good. And most recently lost to Marcin Tybura. But I mean, honestly, that Marcin Tybura fight was so sloppy. And to have the only person that you've lost to as a top 10 UFC heavyweight, not too bad. So Hinata Dinez should get the knockout here. I doubt this will be on the main card, which is pretty good, which means they'll put Brandon Royval and Joshua Van on the main card for UFC 317. And the last new fight, which I think a lot of people are curious that was made for UFC 317, Payne Talbot back in action, second fight of the year, as he takes on Felipe Lima. This is pretty shocking, as you would think Payne Talbot, someone who just lost to Rayony Barcelos, they would give him someone easy, but no. No. Payton Talbot now, after suffering his first professional defeat, will take on the 14-1, 2-0 in the UFC, Felipe Lima, who has been a champion in Amazon Talent, Fight Club Rush, and Octagon MMA. Bantamweight champion there, but yeah, this dude's an absolute killer. He's beaten Miles Johns, he's beaten Muhammad Naimov, two great names to start his UFC run. And honestly, Payton Talbot, I'm sorry, Felipe Lima is going to take you down and submit you. That's what I think is going to happen. I'm a little perplexed at this. I'm not mad, but Peyton Talbot hype train may be coming to a brief close with that. But yes, those are all your new UFC fights. Good amount. Good amount over the last 2 to 3 days. Thank you very much, Dana White. You're probably going to start to see less and less fight news until we reach more of July, August for that fall slate, but we'll take what we can get. Similar to big things being announced, you know, the MCU. They're always announcing fun things, and we love Marvel here on the channel. We went through a long phase, you know. I think it was after I saw Deadpool and Wolverine in July. I didn't watch Marvel for almost a full year. And then out of nowhere, Lexi was like, we should watch Captain America Brave New World because we haven't seen it. And I'm like, I don't really want to watch that. Seems kind of average. And I watched it, and I was pleasantly blown away by it. And then I'm like, let's go to the movies and watch Thunderbolts. Now I'm full MCU. So on today's episode, we will be ranking Phase 5 of the MCU. We have 6 movies that took place, and we're going to rank them from 6 being the worst to 1 being the best. But there's only really 2 on here that I would consider bad. The other 4, pretty good, and actually the top 2, I think, are fantastic. So, thought it out, let's dive right on into it. And with most things, we want to get the bad out of the way right away. So, coming in at number 6, I don't think this is going to be a surprise to anyone. The Marvels, however you want to say it, just didn't hit. Came out in 2023, and this is one of the only MCU movies. I don't know if this is actually true, but I think it may be the only MCU movie to lose money. They had a $374 million budget, and the movie only made $206 at the box office. That is right now. You have to take into account DVD sales, I don't know, streaming services work, but at the box office, losing $150 million is not something that the MCU or Marvel heads, the guys in the suits in the office, they're not going to like all that. And I think it just boils down to we didn't really need a Captain Marvel 2. Just going to say that. And overall, this movie is just not good. And I actually haven't watched it in its entirety. I do want to say that. So I've seen so many clips of this. I've seen the end credit scenes. I've seen the actual ending of this. The trailer kind of gives away the whole movie, but I've just seen so much of this, I don't even have a desire to watch it. I'm going to make Lexi watch it, and then she can tell me how it is watching it as a whole. But just from everything about this, all the reviews, all the videos I've seen, the villains suck. The villains aren't, like, scary or anything. This movie is funny. It tries to be funny and silly, and there's just no comedy in it. You're introducing one too many characters. I mean, it's a Captain Marvel sequel, and instead it's like 3 main women that you're just introducing. So you obviously have Monica Rambeau. She is the daughter of Maria Rambeau, who is it? Carol Danvers, Brie Larson's character, Captain Marvel's character's best friend. Then you also introduce Kamala Khan as Miss Marvel. There was a Disney Plus show you needed to watch, which I had no interest in watching, and yeah. It all took place. You get Samuel L. Jackson in here as Nick Fury, but I think the only real main takeaway from this is that, and the end credits scene, Monica Rambeau is sent into the multiverse, and she is able to communicate with some X-Men people, which is something super weird. But I don't know where Captain Marvel's at now, or Kamala Khan, but overall, just not a good movie. Not a good movie, and I'm telling you that this movie lost millions and millions, tens of hundreds of millions of dollars at the box office is all you need to know for not wanting to watch this. But yeah, this is just not a good movie overall, and it's one of the shorter MCU movies, I should add, because I think they knew that people didn't want to watch this overall. But yeah, you know, cool poster. Good poster. Captain Marvel's powerful. That's all I got. Marvel's coming in at number 6. Coming in at number 5 on our list. Only this one, you know, I'll edge it a bit over the Marvels just because I love Paul Rudd. But Ant-Man the Wasp, Quantumania. You would think that with how, you know, decent Ant-Man and then Ant-Man the Wasp was. Ant-Man the Wasp was kind of average, but Ant-Man was a really good movie. And as for Ant-Man the Wasp Quantumania, you know, the one area this movie doesn't succeed in is the overuse of CGI. I will say that. They also have way too many characters. I do think that has been just a common theme with MCU movies nowadays, is just introducing one too many unnecessary characters, and that happened here. Now, Kang was a super awesome villain in this, and it's just kind of a shame that he was supposed to be the next big bad, and he just never ended up being able to do it, because I think Jonathan Majors was beating his wife or something, which we do not support here on the channel. Very bad of him, so kick him out. Now, this movie, unlike Captain Marvels, did make money at the box office, but it didn't make $100 million. It made $476 million on a $388 million budget. So there's those things you have to look at. So the entire plot of this is basically they have to go into the multiverse, or not the multiverse, the quantum realm to stop Kang and to save their mom or something. It's all a bunch of heebie-jeebie. But overall, it's just a little too goofy, the overuse of CGI. And once it's over, you're just kind of like, oh, that was kind of just an average, mediocre movie. And I can probably do without seeing it again. And honestly, I haven't seen it again, and I don't really have a desire to. So I will say Paul Rudd's amazing. I was not rocking with the new haircut for Hope Van Dyne in this, played by Evangeline Lilly. Jonathan Majors, absolute beauty of a villain. Great actor. Great actor overall, and Cassie Lang was really annoying. I was really not liking Cassie Lang. I like Cassie Lang better when she was a little kid and she wasn't spewing about climate change and crap. That was so random in this movie. But yeah, Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, can probably do without seeing that again. Coming in number four, and this is a pretty good movie, Captain America: Brave New World. And I think the reason it was so good is I went in with zero to none expectations. I really had no expectations for this. This just came out February 2025, and it did good. It did good. $180 million budget, $450 million at the box office. That's what you get when you don't have to spend. I mean, $180 million is a lot of a budget, but we're talking about the MCU here. And this movie just does exactly what it needs to do. Introduces Sam Wilson, kind of explains what he's trying to do. You have this mystery of what's going on. You kind of have a villain swerve, which I didn't even know they teased in the trailer. And that's the really only bad thing about this movie. The only bad thing is that in the trailer, they spoiled that, what is it, the president, Harrison Ford's character, Thaddeus Ross, he becomes Red Hulk at the end of the film. And I understand that's what you need to do to tease this movie and to draw some appeal in, but that's kind of like the climax at the end, and you see this fight happening, and then you see him being put on the raft, which is ironic because he put all the Avengers on the raft. And I just think if you'd have been able to keep that a secret, it would have had some more allure and some more excitement when it happened. But I'm also glad this movie finally referenced the giant celestial poking out of the ground. It's basically the modern day Antarctica, okay? Or it is the Antarctica of this world, as everyone's trying to get a piece of it. But Anthony Mackie does a decent job as Sam Wilson. Danny Ramirez as the new Falcon. What's his character's name? Joaquin Torres or whatever. He does a great job. You get a whole bunch of Isaiah Bradley is in this, and he's a character you wouldn't know if you didn't watch Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is critical to the way to stuff about this. Giancarlo Esposito, he's fun in this as a villain. You get a whole different bunch of villains in this, which honestly isn't too bad. Tim Blake Nelson is back as Samuel Stearns, and I didn't even realize that he had been, he was in The Incredible Hulk. So we've now tied The Incredible Hulk movie into this, which I really like. It is kind of sad that we did have to recast Thaddeus Ross with the passing of, William Hurt, rest in peace. So, but I'm overall not too bad. And the end credit scene teases that there's things coming from this world that we aren't aware of, and we need to be prepared for them. So there's that. But this one, I kind of had low expectations going in. It's 7 out of 10. You know, it's a run-of-the-mill MCU movie, but it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I think it does exactly what it needs to do, and it doesn't do too much. Now, I'm going to be honest, I don't know if we need another Captain America movie. I actually am very curious to see the direction of movies after we get through this entire multiverse saga, but we'll have to see. It is very interesting. Now, getting into the top three. These top three are all very rewatchable and all movies that I would most definitely go in for. Now, starting with number three, the most recent one I saw, Thunderbolts. I have to say, Thunderbolts, the biggest surprise. This may be one of the biggest surprise movies I've seen in the last while. Because, I'm kind of going in and I'm like, I don't know what this is. Why do we have a bunch of B-plus superheroes all forming a team? And that's exactly what the movie is. The entire movie is all of these characters we've come to know. U.S. Agent. What's his character's name? Played by frickin', oh my gosh, Wyatt Russell, John Walker, whatever his name is. You have Bucky Barnes, who has never been the guy. He was always Captain America's sidekick. And then he was in next in line to be Captain America, and it went to Sam Wilson. And now he's kind of one of the leaders of this team. Florence Pugh is the lead in this film as Yelena Belova, and she is phenomenal. Yelena's like the new leader of this team, essentially, and she brings everyone together. Olga Kurylkino, who's playing Taskmaster, the swerve of her dying right off the bat, absolutely love that, because everyone from the get-go was like, we don't like this character. They fumbled Taskmaster, and they kill her right off the bat. You're kind of like, okay, this movie isn't going to play around. Lewis Pullman as Bob, Sentry, Void, whatever, great villain, slash becomes a hero, slash joins the team. He was phenomenal in this. You also have, oh my gosh, what's her name? The Ghost, whatever her character's name is. I'm so sorry. I can't remember it. Hannah Jo Common, or Ava Starr is her character's name in the film. She is way more enjoyable in this than she was in Ant-Man and the Wasp. I do have to say, she was very enjoyable in this. And then, of course, David Harbour. Oh my gosh, as Red Guardian, so, so funny. They're going throughout this whole movie. You never know where the movie's heading. You never know where it's going, and it reaches a point. You're like, this is the point. Then you find out, oh, we're actually going here, and it's so enjoyable. You get to the climax, and Valentina, great villain in this, as this like leader of the CIA, and she introduces them as the new Avengers to end the film. It turns out the actual name of the movie is the new Avengers. Thunderbolts is just a little quotation, but yeah. This team is as legit as they come. It was such a good movie. Such a good movie. I would definitely rewatch this. It'd be fun to rewatch this, especially knowing like where everything heads. But this is great. This is great. And it was actually James Gunn who expressed interest in making this team. And it's a group of anti-heroes and super criminals. And Kevin Feige said, maybe with how good Guardians of the Galaxy was. Of course, James Gunn moved on. And they were like, you know what? We love this idea. We are going to do it. And the end credits scenes, pretty funny. Good moment with David Harbour. And then you actually get a clip from Avengers Doomsday of the Fantastic Four arriving into the universe. So we are in for just a crazy future of movies, and this one sets it up perfectly. Same budget with $180 million as Captain America Brave New World, made $378, so not as much as Captain America Brave New World, but without having the Captain America logo, with just being called the Thunderbolts, and a lot of people like myself are skeptical. Because this is just that another team they're introducing. And it's safe to say, you know, they introduced the Marvels, those little group of girls. They introduced Eternals, which, by the way, has gone literally nowhere. They've introduced other teams, I swear. And this is one of my favorite teams they've been able to put together. So, Thunderbolts, encourage you all to check that out. It's probably going to be going out of theaters, I assume. But, hey, I went about a month after it came out, and it was very enjoyable. So that's why it comes in at number three. Now coming in at number two, we have Deadpool and Wolverine. I would put Deadpool Wolverine at number two, and the movie we're going to list at number one, if you can guess what is, then you know, as two movies that are just elite level in the MCU. And Deadpool Wolverine is just as good as advertised. Came out in July 2024, and yes, $200 million budget, $1.338 billion at the box office. That is right. It made $138 million in profit, and then you add an extra billion to that because it's just how successful it was. And this is what you get when you pair two world-class actors up together, and they just have such great chemistry. And you have Wade Wilson as Ryan Reynolds and Logan as Hugh Jackman, Deadpool and Wolverine. And this entire movie, so good, and such a fresh take. This is how you successfully do cameos, might I add. I mean, the cameos went absolutely crazy in this. I mean, it was honestly ridiculous. You have so many. I don't even know where to begin. You have the OG Juggernaut. You have the OG Blob. You have Psylocke. You have Callisto. You have Lady Deathstrike, Azale, Toad, Bullseye. You have who's the Captain America actor? Who plays Captain America? For goodness sake. Oh gosh, this is hurting. Where's the cast list? Come on, tell me. I don't know his freaking name. It'll come to me. It's whoever plays Captain America. Son of a gun. I'm mind blanking live here on the pod. And Captain America, it's Chris Evans, son of a bitch. Chris Evans is in this movie, for goodness sakes. He was so fun. Channing Tatum as well. You have the OG Blade in here. This is so, so funny. And the music is great. This choreography is great. The costumes, everything about this is great. I haven't seen it since watching the movie theater. One of my favorite movie theater experiences. I mean, you could just feel the energy of it all. Oh, it was so, so good. And it's such a great redemption arc from where we left Wolverine at with Logan and to seeing where he is at now. And especially for Deadpool, you know, Deadpool 1, very good. Deadpool 2 is kind of just an interesting follow-up, and I think Deadpool Wolverine might take the cake as being my favorite it just might take the cake as being my favorite. But this does so much justice to hardcore MCU fans. It is phenomenal. Very, very encouraged everyone to watch. I honestly might go back and rewatch it tonight. I might. I don't know where I can watch it. I don't have Disney Plus, but I'll have to find it or something. So this is just phenomenal. I hope they make another Deadpool movie. I'm sure they will. You know, it's a $1 billion franchise, but it's great. It's great, and it introduces an R-rated movie into the MCU, and it works perfectly. It truly works perfectly. And you mix in new characters, get some old characters, Deadpool and Wolverine, the number 2 movie in Phase 5. But with that, it brings us to number 1, and this is just a top 10 MCU movie, in my opinion. It is my favorite trilogy of all the movies, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. It is just so good. It's just so good. And James Gunn did such a good job with... By the way, James Gunn made the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise into what it was, these 3 movie films, and he did such a good job. He literally took over the competitor to Marvel DC. Like, that's how good he is. He was so good. This director of just these one string of movies took over the entire enemies brand. That's how freaking good he was. And this movie is just, oh, it's emotional, it's gripping, it's gritty, it is so funny. You know, I'm yet to watch it since my first experience. I never really want to ruin that by going back and rewatching it, but you just do such justice to Rocket, and you hear his backstory, and it's so emotional. You introduce this villain, the creator? What's his name? Oh my gosh, the High Evolutionary, yes. And he is just so evil. He is just pure evil, and there is no good in him. And he doesn't have to be the most powerful, but he's the smartest, and he's just pure evil. And you have Will Poulter in this as Adam or whatever. He is so funny in this. And Batista, Dave Batista playing Drax, so good in this. And it's even sad, you know, with Gamora and seeing that that she is not even on the Guardians of the Galaxy, and her and Peter Quill will never end up together, in a sad sense. And it's just, you know, at the end of the movie, the gang splits up. The gang splits up, and it's just how it had to be. And it's emotional. It's really emotional. And the fact that James Gunn was able to create that with characters is so moving and so touching. And you have actual deaths in this, and you have so many fake deaths. And it's just, oh, I know I hate fake deaths. I complained about that sometimes. But, man, you have this moment where Star-Lord almost dies, and you really think that he's gone. And it is like, you feel like crying. You feel like shedding some tears. I mean, it is that dang good. And the soundtrack, 10 out of 10. I mean, what is it? Was it the one song by Heart? Go Crazy on You and Creep. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. So freaking good. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, easily the best of Phase 5, and I encourage everyone to check it out. You gotta watch this. If you haven't seen this movie, what are you doing? You have to go watch this pronto. But yeah, Phase 5, pretty good overall. 4 successes, 2 duds, and out of the duds, I'd say really only The Marvels was a bad movie. Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania is just like, you could have done so much different. But yeah, a lot of good movies in here, and I'm excited for Phase 6. I'm also excited that we may be doing a full-on ranking on YouTube of every single MCU movie. I'm still working on it. I do not understand how YouTube works or how to edit videos and stuff, but we're going to learn. We're going to build our own personal brand. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's not talk anymore about the MCU. Let's talk about the ATL, the UFC. That's right, UFC Atlanta went down, and it's safe to say it was interesting. That's what I'm going to say on this. It's safe to say it was interesting. Now, am I going to say this was a successful event? I don't really know. I mean, the main event was interesting, to say the least. Of course, Kamaru Usman, Joaquin Buckley. But I do think the one thing I heard this was a lot of decisions. So we're going to go through. We'll start from the last prelim, go to the main event. Let's give our thoughts. Kicking off the card, we were in the women's straw weight division. Actually, it was the women's flyweight, now that I think about it. Jamie Lenore took on Vanessa Demopoulos, and just as we predicted, Jamie Lenore handles business, beating Vanessa across the board. 30-27's light work for Jamie Lenore. I mean, yeah. Hunter once even strikes at 36. 115 total strikes, 44. She goes 2 of 3 on takedowns. 2.5 minutes control time, not much. Vanessa, 0 of 5. Round 1, outstruck 35-5. Round 2, 33-20. And round 3, 33-11. Vanessa taking this on short notice. Props to her, but yeah, nothing going her way. Jamie Lenore back in the win column now. 3-2 in the UFC. Good for her. The flyweight division will take you, Jamie Lenore. And honestly, pretty dominant win. pretty dominant win. As for Vanessa, this is now 3 straight losses. She may be headed to the independent circuit, if I'm being honest. But hey, women's flyweight, good win for her. Now, I don't really know, rankings-wise, who Jamie Lynn Horth could take on. I believe Ariana Da Silva was cut from the UFC. If not, that could be a fight for Jamie Lynn Horth, so I'll offer that. And for Vanessa, yeah, little to be loved there. But yes, good win for Jamie Lynn Horth, doing what she needs to. And yeah, by the way, on predictions, 8-4. 8-4 on the evening, not too shabby. On the year, 159-80. How about that? We are plus 69. Oh, 79. We're plus 79 on the year for predictions. This is one of our best years to date. But yes, good win for Jamie Lynn Horth to kick off the night. After that, welterweight action, and Phil Roanage Lusa decide to give us a back and forth war. And Phil Roe, gonna be honest, Phil Roe might be a leader, might be the new leader for comeback of the year. That is right, comeback fight of the year. Phil Roe down 2 rounds. Finishes Angelusa with under a minute left. That is right. Round 1 gets going. Angelusa, 1 of 2 on takedowns, 4 minutes of control time. 15 significant strikes to 2, 58 total strikes to 8. Mauled Phil Roe in the grappling realm. Not looking good. Round 2, Ange beat him on the feet. 43 significant strikes to 34. He drops Phil Roe. Goes 0 of 3 on takedowns for about a minute 15 of control time. Nothing was going well. Nothing was going on. Then round 3 comes out. Angelusa, 2 of 2 on takedowns, is holding him down. And then Phil gets to his feet and says, "What am I doing? I'm Phil freaking Roe. I'm fresh." What's Phil's nickname? What is Phil's nickname? "I'm the Fresh Prince." I knew it was the Fresh Prince. And he goes to town on Angelusa. He gets him up against the cage. He is rocking him. Ange is retreating backwards. And then there's this moment where Phil is holding him up against the cage. And literally it felt like just an utter beatdown. Just uppercut, uppercut, uppercut. It was murder. It was attempted murder. And the referee, I could just tell that Brett McKeehan was just like, "Do I stop this? Like, what do I do right now?" And eventually, Angelusa shoved Phil Roe off, and then he just collapsed. Fight was waved off. Phil Roe, win column, make it his 7th career knockout, 11th career finish. Great work for Phil Roe. Absolutely loved it. And had we not had 2 more beautiful KOs, he probably would have gotten a performance bonus. But great stuff for Phil Roe. First win since 2022. My goodness. Almost 3 years coming for Phil Roe. Good stuff. Good stuff, Phil. Absolutely love to see it. And hey, at 34, getting a big knockout win here, that's exactly how you revitalize your career. As for Angelusa, yeah, this might do it. 2-3 with a no contest. Hasn't won since September 2023. 2-fight losing streak officially. I don't know what's next for Ange, if I'm being honest. It's tough. It really is tough, I think, for Phil. Phil, there is some fun options ahead. You know, you could always matchmake him with someone who won earlier, Michael Chiesa. We're going to bring him up in a bit. And as for Angelusa, you could matchmake him with the guy who lost in that Court McGee, but I don't really know. It's tough. It really is tough. Yeah, a lot of fun fights for Phil Roe at 170 pounds. You know, you could always have him. Who is Phil not fought? He's fought in Jake Matthews, Neil Magny, Nico Price, maybe Jacoby Smith fighting Nico Price. If Jacoby Smith wins, there could be a fight right there. I don't really know. I don't really know. Phil Roe, he'll remain for sure, but Angelusa is a bigger question. Good fight overall, and yeah, we always love a comeback knockout. Following that, bantamweight action, Ricky Simone taking on Cameron Smotherman, and Cameron Smotherman was the one being smothered. Only one judge gives him 1 round. Other than that, 30-27, 30-27, 20-28, Ricky Simone uses his grappling to maul him. 34 significant strikes to 29, 3 of 10 on takedowns for Ricky, 9 minutes, 13 seconds of control time. Round 1, a 10-8, 4.5 minutes of control time, 7 significant strikes to 1, Ricky dominating him there. Round 2, you know, a bit closer. Ricky still lands a takedown, 3 minutes of control time. And then round 3, mainly fought on the feet, except for Ricky just shooting takedowns, holding him up against the cage. Cameron outstrikes him 17-11, but is still mauled in the grappling. We didn't learn until post-fight that these two were actually trash-talking each other. And Ricky was saying that he had Cameron down, and he was just like, "I'm arresting you. This is, how's it feel to be arrested right now?" Because he had, like, pinned down, like, he's being arrested, and he goes, "You are such a racist." And I don't know if it was serious or not, but Ricky Simone, 2-fight winning streak. Now look at that. For a man who was 0-3 from April to June of 2023 to 2024. He has now gone on a little two-fight winning streak here in 2025, and I'm excited to see what's next for Ricky. I really am. You know, people forget he's only 32. He had been in the UFC a fat freaking minute, and hey, sky's the limit now for Ricky Simone. He's probably one fight away from the rankings, and I think his next opponent, we can match make them on the same card. We'll speak about it later, but good work for Ricky Simone. If I actually need to give a name like right now, though, you know, I think if Marcus McGee loses to Pierre Dion, like I think he will, that could be an option. Or even Kyler Phillips. But Ricky Simone, I think, might deserve another crack at the rankings. But Ryony Barcellos, we're going to talk about, that could be another fun option. Then we got into the first fight I predicted incorrectly, and son of a gun, Cody Durden, you bastard, you dastardly boy. Yeah, yeah, my underdog pick did not work here, but nonetheless, great knockout for Jose Ochoa. I mean, holy cow, holy cow. The combo was crazy. 11 seconds into round two, literally it goes up. I don't even know if he hit him with like, I don't even know how to describe it. He basically like got Cody Durden moving. His entire face was open. He hits him with this hook uppercut and out his lights go. Great knockout for Jose Ochoa. Seventh career knockout, making 100% finish right now for Jose Ochoa. Look out. Look out, flyweights. Jose Ochoa is here and ready, and he's here to dominate too. Taken down twice in round one, but did manage to outstrike him significantly, 25-9. Jose Ochoa bouncing back from his first career loss to Loner Kavanaugh in November, and now he's in the win column. So I don't know what you do with this guy. Big knockout. Cody Durden was always a player in the rankings. I don't know. I would love to see Loner Kavanaugh get a shot in the... I think he's taking on Charles Johnson. If not, Charles Johnson versus Jose Ochoa could be a fun option. Andre Lima, another name. Ronaldo Rodriguez. There's a multitude of flyweights that he could probably take on. But Jose gets the first performance bonus. You love to see it from him. Cody Durden, two-fight losing streak now. 1-4 in his last five. And he's been finished in three of those. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're going to cut Cody. He's always fun. You know, Cody Durden's always a fun little fighter in the company, but that'll be tough to see. Honestly, depending on if Bruno Silva, probably be a better matchup for Jose Ochoa. Cody Durden could maybe take on Tim Elliott if Kai Sakura like brutally knocks him out or something, but I don't know. I don't know what to do with Cody Durden. I don't know if he needs to leave the company, but he's always been hit or miss, and getting knocked out like this, not too pretty. So even though I predicted incorrectly, still very entertaining. Following that, the biggest favorite in UFC history, Malcolm Oldmaker, I believe he closed at like -2,500. It was something insane. Taking on Chris Moutinho, the fight lasted 2.5 minutes, and oh, man. I mean, we all picked Malcolm Oldmaker. No one picked Chris Moutinho, but still, Malcolm put his lights out. Cold KO of the year nominee. Oh, my goodness. Malcolm Oldmaker, 10-0 now. All of his wins in round one so far in the UFC. I mean, he is my debut fighter of the year, I think. Malcolm Oldmaker. I mean, debut in August, second fight in June, and total fight time, not even a full round of UFC. Oh my gosh, crazy work here. Clips Moutinho, he face plants him, slumps him out. Yeah, Malcolm Oldmaker is as legit as one would say in the men's bantamweight division. So yeah, what's next for him? A good opportunity next. I mean, this guy's 31, getting a 6 career knockout, 8 finishes out of 10 wins. We love to see that. We really do love to see that. I don't know against who, you know. I think if Cody Garbrandt sticks around, I would like to see Cody Garbrandt take on this guy. But that's a conversation for when we get to Cody Garbrandt. But man, this was a nasty, nasty finish. And it was good to see. 50K for Malcolm Oldmaker. Now, as for Chris Moutinho, I don't know if they give him another shot. You know, he's 14-7. He's 0-3 in the UFC, but knocked out each of them. I don't know. I don't know if you keep him, but if you do want to bring him back, I'm sure there's some low-level bantamweight he could take on. Who about Cameron Smotherman? Cameron Smotherman versus Chris Moutinho. There you go, to matchmaker on the same card. Because I think Cameron, he's the one that lost to Ricky. I think he's 1-2. In the UFC, so we'll have to keep an eye on Chris Moutinho, but taking the fight on short notice. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for saving the day. But yeah, Malcolm Oldmaker's an absolute murderer. Following that, Michael Chiesa, Court McGee, welterweight division. If you wanted action, you shouldn't have tuned in for this one. Chiesa attempts 2 takedowns, McGee attempts 6. Neither of them land. 72 cinnamon strikes to 39 in favor of Michael Chiesa. Just a distance striking affair. And Michael Chiesa wins. Good stuff for him. There's literally nothing to say here. This was a dull, boring fight. And honestly, the fact Michael Chiesa finished Tony Ferguson and Max Griffin, but not Court McGee, is an alarming sight. So Michael Chiesa, a little 3-fight winning streak within the last year. That's good for him. He was mentioning maybe calling out Colby Covington, but said he didn't even really want to entertain it because he knows that fight will never happen. It's a good thing Michael Chiesa is a realist, but I would say there's got to be someone we can match him up with to potentially get him in the rankings. You know, Wonderboy Thompson and Gabriel Bonfim, the loser of that, could be someone Michael Chiesa could take on if we want to matchmake on the same card, which I love doing. Phil Rowe versus Michael Chiesa. Both of those guys could deserve one last shot at the rankings. Whoever wins that gets it. But yeah, this wasn't an entertaining decision. And as for Court McGee, I mean, he's 40. He's 1-4 in his last 5, and it's just not going to get prettier from him. So if you want to give Ansluso one more shot, there's a fight you make. But yeah, pretty dull fight here. Pretty dull fight here. And to round out the prelims, I mean, nothing too good. Paul Craig, Rodolfo Bellotto, is ruled a no contest with a second left in round number 1. The entire fate of their careers on the line. And this one, I mean, Paul Craig getting a bit better of him on the feet. 17-7 strikes at 10, 0-6 on takedowns. Rodolfo Bellotto lands his own takedown, gets almost a minute of control time. And then to end the fight, Bellotto was kind of going for some strikes. He was in top control in guard. And, you know, Paul Craig's kind of throwing up some kicks. And right before the round ends, Paul Craig hits him with an illegal kick right to the jaw. Bellotto gets hit right on the chin, and he gets knocked out cold, is what we all thought. And then we went and watched the replay, and this boy was doing an Aljamain Sterling sell and thought he was going to walk away with a DQ win. And the committee was like, this dude was hit with an illegal kick and oversold it. So the fight is ruled a no contest. Just, oh, so comedic. So comedic. And the best part is you wouldn't see it unless you looked on the replay. And on the replay, you can see him. He gets kicked, and the shock, he's looking up at the ref as he's falling backwards, and then he falls backwards, and as he hits the ground, he lays his arms out. All right, so it looks like he's knocked out. Then he fake wakes himself up, acts shocked, goes up against the cage, acts like he's completely unconscious. Oh my goodness, Rodolfo Bellotto, you absolute troll. You absolute troll, Trotor. Oh my goodness. But yeah, this fight's ruled a no contest. Bellotto, it's terrible luck. Rodolfo Bellotto having a draw in February, now a no contest in June. 2025 has not been kind to Rodolfo Bellotto. As for Paul Craig, this man still hasn't won since July 2023, and now is 1-5 in his last 6. Actually, 1-6 in his last 7, because this one doesn't even count as a win here. So what do? You just run this back. Run it back. I don't know how long that Bellotto's going to have to be medically cleared to be out, but yeah, just run this one back later in the summer. So goofy. So goofy. Following that, we got into the main card. The main card, Alonzo Menifield, Omar Sy in the men's light heavyweight division. And we have another undefeated fighter getting fraud checked, if you could say. Now, I don't really think it's a fraud check, but Omar Sy should have won this, doesn't win. And now we're left wondering what's next. So here's the interesting thing. Omar Sy outstruck him 34-29 significantly. 37-34 in total strikes, and went 1-5 on takedowns for 4 minutes and 13 seconds of control time. Round 1, I missed this. Round 1, Omar Sy struck him 16-8, but I think the judges gave Alonzo that round due to power punches. Round 2, Omar, 4 minutes and 13 seconds of control time, easily took that round. Round 3, Alonzo outstrikes him. Very clear round for Alonzo. It all came down to round 1, and they saw it going to Alonzo Menifield. All the judges, Will, Derek, and Ron, gave it to him. And plus 350, Alonzo Menifield, 37 years old, just beat the undefeated Omar Sy. Great work, though. Great work for Alonzo. You know, not an entertaining fight, to say the least. You could hardly even call it technical. But number 15th ranked Alonzo Menifield back in the win column again. 2-0 in 2025. You're either sucking in 2025 or you're doing good. And Alonzo now has a little win streak and can maybe look up in the rankings. Even, you know, I think Bogdan Guskov has a fight coming up with someone. You could maybe have him take on the loser of that, I don't know. But, yeah, there's also other options. You know, if you want to have Alonso take on Rodolfo Bellotto and just forget about Paul Craig, you can do that. But good stuff for Alonso Menifield. That's Romar Sy. You know, they all lose. They all lose. McGregor wasn't undefeated. Poirier wasn't undefeated. Even John Jones had that one loss on his record, okay? Even Daniel Cormier lost eventually. So let's not hold this too much against Omar Sy. He'll be back, okay? I don't doubt it. You can do Omar Sy versus Paul Craig. How about that? Omar Sy versus Paul Craig, Rodolfo Bellotto versus Alonso Menifield. Those are some fun fights. You can book those. You can make them. That's the decisions I'm going to go with. But yeah, pretty dull fight right there. And then it didn't get any better. Mansoor Abdul-Malik, Cody Brundage. Mansoor, this was set up for Mansoor to absolutely obliterate Cody Brundage, and he actually goes out and loses round one, 11-4. Okay, 11 significant strikes to 4. He only attempted 15 strikes throwing. Round two, 10-10 even on significant strikes. Then round three, Mansoor had 11-9. They had a clash of heads 30 seconds into round three. They go to the judges' scorecards then prematurely, and it is 29-28, 29-28, and 30-27. They were biased towards Mansoor Abdul-Malik. But honestly, it was close. Power to Mansoor. Brundage just landed a couple extra kicks here and there. So boring. So boring. Any energy this Atlanta crowd had just sucked it out of them. Absolutely drained it out of them. But Cody Brundage now, you know, we always know he has a weird UFC record, 11-7 with a no contest. I don't know if they're bringing him back, to be honest. I don't even know what you would do with Cody Brundage, but you can always find some up-and-coming guy to freaking take him on. I have no idea. How about I don't even know. Marco Tulio, Michelle Barro, whoever loses that, they can fight Cody Brundage and get a clip. But Mansoor Abdul-Malik remains undefeated, 9-0. He is 3-0 in the UFC, 2-0 in 2025. But he clearly is not ready for a big shot up the rankings. I do think that they're going to need to assess what they want to do with him, per se. But who's an option? Who did MMA Theory throw out? I always love hearing who he wants, guys, to take on next. He actually hasn't dropped next fights. Now, I find that very interesting, MMA Theory. Why haven't you announced who you think that Mansoor Abdul-Malik should take on next? I don't know, but yeah. Middleweight division, Mansoor Abdul-Malik wins a boring, boring decision, which ends 30 seconds in. Kind of dumb. After that, Raoni Barcelos and Cody Garbrandt. And after round one, we were like, Cody Garbrandt's back. Cody Garbrandt wins round one of Raoni Barcelos, looking good, and then loses round two. And then loses round three. And it just was a dull win for Raoni Barcelos. And Cody Garbrandt, supporters are sad and haters are happy. But yes, Garbrandt loses in this one. I don't even know at times how Barcelos was in a good position to beat him up, but he did. 37 significant strikes to 28, a takedown. 1 for 11 on takedowns for Barcelos. 0 of 7 for Garbrandt. Just bad, to be honest. Just a lame old fight. But Raoni Barcelos, 3-fight winning streak now. He's now beating Peyton Talbot and Cody Garbrandt. Like I said, Barcelos versus Wellmaker, Barcelos versus Ricky Simone. I really like that. And someone can get shot at the rankings. But I think the Ricky Simone Raoni Barcelos fight just kind of writes itself. Similar styles of grappling, can also strike. 38 years old, great win for Raoni Barcelos. As for Garbrandt, look, him versus Malcolm Wellmaker, that's the only option I could see. That's really the only option. And to be honest, I don't know why he's even still, like, fighting. What is Cody Garbrandt's goal? He was talking about fighting Sean O'Malley if he won, and that was just never going to happen. So Cody Garbrandt has moved far down the food chain. 2-fight losing streak now. He's 2-4 in his last 6. And, I mean, honestly, career-wise, this guy was 11-0 and is now 14-7. So he's gone 3-7 over his last 10. Just wild. Just wild. So for Garbrandt, I don't know if he's going to call it a career. Maybe he needs to go to a different promotion, you know, maybe the PFL or something, Bellator, I don't know, but Cody Garbrandt's time in the UFC, I think, might be coming to an end. If not, Malcolm Wellmaker can get a little clip on him, and that would be a fun striking matchup. No grappling there. Let's make that. Middleweight division, fun matchup here, Edmund Shahbazyan, Andre Petrovsky, and a run-of-the-mill decision. You could even do Edmund Shahbazyan versus Mansoor Abdul-Malik, or Mansoor Abdul-Malik versus Andre Petrovsky, if you want to matchmake on the same card, but Edmund just gets the better of Andre, and I'm so glad I rode with Edmund here, landed a knockdown in the third, defended 4 takedowns from Andre, and by the way, taken down twice, only 23 seconds of control time, he was not being held down, outstrikes him 53-34 significantly. Good stuff, Edmund, we love enough to see it. 2-0 now in 2025. And yes, I like the fight against Mansoor Abdul Malik. If you want to have him rematch Brad Tavares, that could be a fun fight. You also got Bruno Ferreira. You got Nelsutin Ruzaboyev and Brian Battle battling. Okay, at middleweight, winner of that could take on Edmund Shahbazyan has so many options. 27, all right, and now he's on a little two-fight win streak. And 3-1 in his last four, I might add that as well. As for Andre, this snaps his three-fight winning streak, but like I said, he'll be back. He'll be back. You could do Cody Brundage versus Andre Petrovsky, too. Just a matchmake on the same card. But, yeah, another decision. It was killing me. And Rose Namajunas, Miranda Maverick, who was no better. 30-27, 30-27, 29-28. Rose handles Miranda Maverick. Didn't land a knockdown in round three. I thought that was cool. Maverick didn't even land a significant strike in round three. She only attempted two significant strikes. Rose just kind of dominated her. She basically, I don't even know what she did, but she just got on top somehow. Rose Namajunas, 6.5 minutes of control time for the fight, especially in rounds two and three. Yeah, Rose Namajunas has just been draining me as of late. She has not had an exciting fight since the Zhang Wei Li saga. I mean, it's been really dull, but 3-1 in her last four, all of them decent fights. I don't know. Rose, she's going to be ranked. Where is she at? Now, finally, we get to talk about actual ranked competitors here, but she's ranked number 7. She'll remain at 7. I don't know. She was talking about fighting Alexa Grasso. I think that could be a fight you could do. If not, you could run back Jessica Andrade for a trilogy fight. I mean, I don't see why not. But in terms of everything else, pound for pound, I'd probably move her past Tatiana Suarez. So she might get a little bump in the men's or the women's pound for pound. But that's all we can do there. For Miranda Maverick, you know, she's going to probably be stuck there at 11 for a while now. I just, you know, I didn't expect her to do much. Now, skill-wise, they were very even, and there's just little to be left about Maverick. But four-fight win streak snapped. She'll look down in the rankings. She already fought Jamie Lynn Horth, so I'm not going to matchmake them. But Casey O'Neill rematch. Wang Kong. Wang Kong versus Miranda Maverick. I'm sorry, Miranda, but I'm going to have you take on Wang Kong. So, yeah, Rose probably looking up. Miranda most definitely looking down. And with that, we got to the main event, ladies and gentlemen, in the welterweight division, Usman Buckley. And I didn't watch it. I was out hanging out with my buddy, and every time I looked up, Usman was in top control position. So, what's the story of this fight for you? Kamaru Usman wins the first four rounds and then loses the fifth. That's the tale of this fight. Buckley, 44-7 strikes to 41. Usman, 137 total strikes to 51. Usman goes 4 of 13 on takedowns for 13 minutes of control time. Round one, a 10-8. But no one gave him a 10-8. 7 significant strikes to 0. 41 total strikes to 1. 4 minutes, 25 seconds control time. Literally landed one takedown. That was that. Round 2, 1 of 2 on takedowns. Buckley only lands 3 significant strikes. Round 3, 1 takedown for Usman. But Buckley did land 10 significant strikes to 8. Round 4, you know, looking a bit better for Buckley. And then Buckley kept on the feet all of round 5. And this did win fight of the night. But I've not seen any highlights from this. I haven't seen a single highlight from this at all. So Cleary and Saldamato get the scorecards right with 49-46. Mike Bell sneaking in a cheeky 48-47 for Buckley. But yes, Kamaru Usman back in the win column. Good for him. Calling for a title shot? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I do not want to see Kamaru Usman get a freaking title shot. I want to see Shavkat Rachmanov. By the way, I did hear they're doing Sean Brady versus Ian Gary, which makes me think Shavkat may be taking on Bilal Muhammad. So we'll have to see. But Usman, good win. I'm going to be honest. His first title defense, if Islam Makhachev beats JDM, like I think a lot of people think he will, might be against Kamaru Usman. They might make the Usman-Makhachev fight. As crazy as it is, Usman might be getting a title shot in his next fight. As for Buckley, 6-fight winning streak snapped. You know, you can get past your Luques, your Wonder Boys, but not your Usmans. Not your Usmans. So what's he going to do next? I don't know. Take on Michael Morales. Take on Carlos Prates. I don't know what's next for Joaquin Buckley, but we'll have to see. You could even have him versus Leon Edwards, though. I think that would be a fun fight. He could probably beat Leon, but yeah, UFC Atlanta, just a long, long card. I mean, when you have 13 fights and only 3 of them are finishes, that's a draining event. Drain 8 event. One of the worst main cards I've seen on the year. I think when I'm doing my rankings for fights of the year or fight nights or whatever, this one certainly is going to be at the bottom. Might actually be at the bottom. I kid you not. This might actually be the worst fight night that we put on. No, there's no way. 107 and 105 were not that good, so I don't know. We'll stick Atlanta somewhere, but yeah, one too many decisions is sometimes too bad. But, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have for the episode today. Atlanta wasn't awful. I'm not trying to sound like a Debbie Downer. I'm just saying, like, I expect more when I watch my UFC events. But we do look ahead to next week, UFC Baku. Oh my gosh, we're going to Azerbaijan. Jamal Hill, Clover Roundtree Jr., Rafael Fiziev, Ignacio Bahomadez, maybe Curtis Blaydes versus Von Kuniev. You also get the debut of Tofik Musayev. Some guy who's 22-5 as he takes on Mike Tabek Orobai. Absolutely love that. Then Nazim Sadikov, Bogdan Grodzback, Oban Elliott. This is a fun, action-packed card, and I'm very excited for it. And Muhammad Usman's fighting. How about that? I'm surprised they didn't matchmake the Usman brothers on the same card, but it is what it is. So we'll look forward to that. And then, of course, we end June. It'll be here before we know it with none other than UFC 317, Topira Oliveira. So, yeah. Good stuff ahead, but that's all I got for today, ladies and gentlemen, on the podcast. And yeah, we'll look forward to having a great week ahead. Episode 200 looms should be coming out. Actually, should I save 200? 200 might be the post-Azerbaijan show, but it would be cool if I did something special for that. We'll have to see, doing my inner dialogue live on the podcast to end it. But have a great week, everyone, and I will catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.